Attention, citizens! It's time for Super Pulp Science!
This is Super Pulp Science, where we talk about how genre gets made. I am GMB Kamichuk. Don't let all those fancy initials fool you. The G stands for Gregory. I'm here with my long-suffering co-host, Justin Curry, who is known the world over as Chasing Artwork. We have also brought into the studio today, well, from the corner of the studio, anyway, Lyndon Radchenka, and he has used his magic and will introduce our very special guest.
This is producer Dan's magic. This is not my magic. And we have brought Zach Schuster, also now known the world over as Zach Schuster, to talk about a trip that we took recently.
You're bi-coastal now.
That's right.
You're bi-coastal.
And we can say world over now and not be like assholes. I mean, we're still assholes, but we can say it.
That's so true.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you are a longtime listener to the show, or you just tuned in last episode, you may have heard Lyndon talking about his adventures in France. And he mentioned that it would be unkind and unjust to tell the whole story without his co-conspirator, you, Zach Schuster. So we wanted to make sure we got you on the show. So for the dear listener, if this is your first episode, we make comics, books, graphic novels, intellectual property, and we take it all over the world and we try to make a go of it. But neither Justin or I have ever been invited to an international French graphic novel festival. And so we brought you, dear listeners, some people who have. Why don't you tell us about where you went and why you went there?
Zach, tell us.
We were invited to go to Angoulême, which is a big comic expo in France, due to our book coming out from a publisher who has contacts there, At Bay Press. They've gone several years in the past, from what I understand. And when we had a book with them, they said, hey, why don't you come to France? And we said we would be crazy not to. We were also crazy too, due to a whirlwind of funding shenanigans, but it was a great trip and it was more than worth it for both Lyndon and I. And I'm glad we made the journey together.
What's Lyndon like to travel with?
Oh, no.
Oh, he's just as awful as he is the rest of the time, but we all put up with it. So, no, he was amazing. He speaks some French and I speak no French. And that was invaluable. So I owe him a great debt and I should stop bad-mouthing him on this recording and the rest of the time.
Our first day in Paris, which we had to travel to before going to Angoulême, Zach bought some inserts for his shoes, but he didn't read the packaging. So he actually bought insoles that didn't work. And then he asked me to take them, to return them at the store while no one speaks English.
So you were literally standing on the shoulders of a giant here.
Well, they don't speak, like, they do speak English, but only if you speak some French at them first. If Lyndon can bumble his way through the start of a conversation, people are super cool. When I try without any French, it does not go well, which I respect. I get it. I'm the guest there and I'm not good. Although at the time of this recording, I am 40 days into a Duolingo streak, so I am on top of it, trying to learn enough French to read all the comics I bought when I was there. But that we will get to later.
Okay, so for like a lot of our listeners are probably more familiar with comic conventions and craft sales and like events like this.
Trade shows.
Yeah, more traditional trade shows. This was something completely different. So for the listener who has no idea what this event is, can you kind of explain it a bit more, the setup of it, how it compares to something that we might have over in North America?
Yes.
You're the featured guest, so all those important questions are yours.
Yeah, I'm looking at the screen. I looked back over, and there's three people staring at me expectantly, and it's just...
It's on you, but you don't have to be polite.
Oh, hi, Dan. I will be polite, except to Lyndon, by policy. The biggest difference there, I'd say, is here it's a lot of like cosplayers and people there for the stuff that isn't comics, I find, more and more these days. Gets a lot of people in the door to find out, oh, hey, these comics are cool. But they're there about the books. That was a lot of the word there. I just heard it. They are there about the books. And there are just like adults lining up to go meet their favorite artists and read books and talk about books. And they print so many more and they're all hardcover. It's just like a lot more respect is given to comics there. I feel like priority. It's just about comics of all sorts for all people, and it's just a different audience. And I found it very interesting. That was my biggest takeaway. How about you, Lyndon?
Yeah, I mean, I touched on this in the last time we very briefly talked about it. And what I really appreciated about that festival was that it wasn't all inside of a convention center.
Mm-hmm.
How would you describe how that show is set up?
Yeah, like, did you guys have a booth?
So we had two booths, but the overall format, to answer Lyndon's question, is it kind of takes over the whole town of Angoulême. All the university had art galleries, and there's several different big buildings that were some there already, I believe, and some that were built, like the Canada Pavilion, where we had one of our two booths. There's also there's an indie hall for all the indie stuff. Then there's a big main publisher hall with all the bigger publishers. And we had a booth in the indie pavilion, or the indie building too. So just a huge, they had to walk in between all these places. But the whole town, like any retail location that wasn't currently a shop, was clearly rented out to people who just brought their back issue collections and made a little shop. Mm-hmm. In the whole town, like the whole town, it's like Calgary has the Stampede, where we all are redneck hicks for a week. These guys have Angoulême and do comics, which I
is better
really liked.
It's better.
Less East cowboy hats. Has their place in the rich tapestry of culture, gentlemen.
But we were hearing from our host that they treat it like we treat Stampede, and I usually leave town for Stampede and go to BC for a week when it's busy back home. And they are kind of fed up. Some of the locals are like, ah, all these people are in town for comics. Just like I'm like, oh, look at all these cowboy jerks. So I guess the grass is always greener where there aren't cowboys, metaphorically or otherwise.
Well, it is greener where there aren't cowboys, because their cows aren't grazing and eating all the grass, actually. So
this is getting really deep. That's or stupid. Could be either.
The other thing is that Zach and I did not have to bring our own wares to sell. The publisher brought that. We did not have the logistics of moving stock, taking money, dealing with any sort of currency whatsoever. We just showed up and signed books. And I alluded to this last time we talked about it, but Zach can go more into detail of the story. But the difference in signings between a trade show and a festival.
I think this is my favorite signing story of all time from cons. Back home, we're paying for our own booth. We're paying for our own books. We need to make money. But if you buy one of our books, we love making it. We'd love to sketch it for you. So we always give free sketches to people who buy our books if they want it. And we have to go pretty quick because, like I said, we're on the hook for all this time and money and expense to be at these shows. So we draw little one-minute sketches. In France, the publishers are paying the artists to be at these booths and sign. So each sketch is like 10, 15 minutes, and they're really nice. Like, they're just a gorgeous drawing in every book. People will line up and like 10 people will get a signed book because everybody else, it just, well, signing's over, took too long. There's even a raffle story we'll get to for Lyndon. But in my case, the very first guy who comes up to buy Hero Man at our first signing got a 1 minute sketch. He's just like, here's the book. I'm like, perfect. Doop, boop. Sent it and gave him my sketch. And he just kind of looked a little like, he wasn't like horrified, but it was like something had gone wrong and I could tell. And I'm looking to my left and I'm looking to my right. And everybody, I'm like, oh, these guys have been really going at it. I went to my first signing. He just drew and drew and drew. I'm like, ah, I screwed up. So after that, all my signings were longer and better and, well, longer. And that's when I learned the hard way. Actually, that man learned the difference between how we do things in Canada and America and France.
I have sampled every language. French is my favorite. Fantastic language. Especially to curse. Nom de Dieu, de putain de bordel, de merde, de saloperie, de connard, d'enculé de ta mère. It's like wiping your ass with silk. I love it.
Well, of course, the difficult part, too, is you're doing these signings, we're doing these signings, but, like, you don't speak French. So it's not like you're
so
not
what's he gonna
having
say?
A conversation with them as you're doing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I speak limited French, so I've got, like, six phrases that I can
French.
Use.
Lyndon's being modest, as
no,
always.
No, it's... No, I
I'm
don't.
Alternating wildly right. between bad mouthing and praising Lyndon, as I always do.
Let's be clear. It's like the way that a person who doesn't draw all the time looks at your 1 minute sketch and says, oh my goodness, that's impossible. How did you do that? You who speak no French see Lyndon able to navigate a
40 days of Duolingo.
Right.
That doesn't mean nothing. It does. That effectively means nothing.
Right. You're seeing his magic power from a place of zero. So
whereas like, and I'm seeing it as my French is only to a point where I can embarrass myself.
Right.
And then ask for sympathy.
Well, and it's a good analogy. It connects to that drawing analogy. Lots of people say, oh, well, I draw a little bit or whatever, but they're embarrassed to show you their sketchbook, right? It's the same kind of thing. They can just draw well enough to embarrass themselves. And so they don't want to do it in front of you.
That's right. Yeah.
Does anybody ever feel like they're past that level? Because I'm still there.
Oh, I'm constantly feeling like the drawing I've done for the person in that 1 minute is almost an insult to the 1 minute they spent waiting for it. Yeah. By doing my best. But I do feel sometimes like, ooh, that one, that was
especially a with the dead work books that we send around. You see three gorgeous drawings and then you mess it all up and hand it to the next person.
See, I prefer it if I haven't seen yours or Steven's in the book, because then I feel like
see Steven's again.
That's right. I feel the bar is nice and low if your drawings are not in it and I can just whip off something. But if yours are there, I'm like, okay, it's 5 minutes for this guy.
I think that's why we got to hustle to sell the books ourselves, not
to be the first drawing. I think it's really important for the warm up as well. Like when I get there first thing in the morning, I'll sit at my booth and I'll draw in books, because one, it creates like something for people to come over and look at. And two, it just warms up those drawing muscles, because I find if I don't do that and then somebody buys a book, that first drawing of the day is usually a bit of a doozy. Like you're not quite warmed up yet. So
it's like starting the car in the corner.
It's like, oh, I'm sorry, but here's your book.
Yeah.
Zach, why don't you tell us about the difference between the comics we're used to seeing here and the types of books that we saw while we were over there?
And this connects to the idea that none of us are any good compared to French artists too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
you bought how many books that you can't read?
I haven't counted on purpose, but it was a lot. It was basically a duffel bag with two stacks of big, heavy hardcovers. And then my clothes were like shoved around the tops and sides as protection. And it was very heavy. I spent all my money and I can't read any of them, but I'm working on it. I lost my train of thought.
Why would you buy all of those books if you can't read them?
Duffel bag full of books you can't read.
They're pretty. And you can't get anything like a lot of them here. Like we said, the art's just amazing. I ended up buying very similar books to what I would buy here. More like adventure stories and a lot of all ages kind of comics and stuff I make. But there were so many other topics. Like, I feel like here we have a lot of superhero stuff. We've got indie sections, but they're all, I don't know, there they had a lot of like comedy books and humor and slice of life and noir and just big fan bases for all of these things.
Yeah.
Whereas here I feel like it's a little more narrowly focused.
I was saying before that when I had the comic store, we would bring in bande dessinée,
yeah.
Close enough for me. Slice of life books, you know, 100 pages, 200 pages where no one throws a punch, no one pulls the trigger, no, like murder isn't the point of reading the story. And just these gorgeous books. And lots of people would buy them from the shop also who cannot read French, just for the sheer craftsmanship of the illustrations therein. And so there's a difference in the marketplace about what is accepted as literature, I think, and what can be perused at your leisure, what you can read at the beach, what you can read on the metro. It's different here.
And the other thing that I really appreciate is just the format of the books there. Like the standard comic book there is a hardcover book.
Yeah.
You know, it's 8.5 by 11 or bigger. Even if it's only 30 pages, it's still a hardcover book.
Something just occurred to me, gentlemen, since the grass is always greener where there are no cowboys. Do you think in France somewhere is a podcast of people speaking in beautiful, beautiful, well-crafted French phrases about how they wish they could have more gunfights, more punches, and more superhero in their comics?
I honestly don't think so. Yeah. They kind of treat comics like we treat manga. Not that I don't read manga too, but it's looked down on a little bit by the average reader there, where it's just kind of like, oh no, I read these, like I don't read American comics.
But I'd argue
there's one or two bigger publishers.
I'd argue here manga is very quickly picking up steam and is going to sort of become the dominant sequential art reading form.
I agree.
But in France I don't
but
remember
there's still that bit of a
Yeah, there's a bit of a stigma, but I don't know if you remember, someone was explaining to us that if your work ended up in the part of the comic book store that had Western comics, you know, your big two, Marvel, DC, it was sort of ignored. And like that corner of the store was largely ignored for the rest of the comics, you know, manga and bande dessinée in the shop.
Yeah.
I wonder if it is comes down to the way the market functions in the West. So for example, everything in the modern bookstore in the West is about cost per unit. And so the cost per unit of manga is worth the risk because the overall unit price is so low compared to a French hardcover full color 8.5 by 11.
Yeah.
You know,
I just remembered a small story about when I was parted ways with Lyndon in France on my way back home. I was in a comic shop and I saw a man picking a slabbed Next Men out of a bin of slabbed American books. Yeah, Hellboy's first appearance, and he was marveling at it. And I saw him deliberating this purchase, and it was probably expensive. It was like a 2 second look, but so
he was about
I don't
to
think
join
he'd be
the
on
burn
a podcast
unit.
About it, but he was looking at it like we would look at. Like I was looking at every other book in that store that I couldn't get back home. So I'm sure there are some fans. And again, there is a publisher, I can't remember the name, but they print American comics. And they had a whole booth in the main building. So like there is some demand for it, but they were one booth out of like 30 of the main publishers printing the biggest hits from back home. And I will say I did buy one book I can get back home. I bought Step by Step by Bagheera. They had a gorgeous hardcover. I only had the singles. And so I bought it again, but it's a silent comic, so I felt justified.
Step by Bloody Step.
What did I say?
Step by Step.
That's actually Bloody Step. Right?
Yeah.
New Kids on the Block. That's the same.
Yeah.
Right.
Same thing.
Right. It's the same. Okay. So, gentlemen, I have listened to this podcast. I believe wholeheartedly now that I have what it takes to make a big splash in Angoulême. How do I get there from here? How does the dear listener become you? How did you, quote unquote, get invited?
So we got invited because we have a book coming out later this year called Hero Man, and our publisher At Bay Press has made it their business to become involved in the international publishing world. But there were people there that were not from a publisher. Like there was the organizer of the Vancouver Comic Arts Festival who was there.
Yeah.
Wait, the VanCaf people were at
VanCaf was in Angoulême. Our friend the Don, I don't know if he was there with the publisher, Don Sparrow.
I'm not actually sure. Yeah.
I don't recall if he was there as part of a publisher. The
group of seven guys. Yeah,
they were there for themselves. So I think there is also an avenue to be involved if you can get in touch with the proper persons in Quebec that are involved with organizing the Canadian attendees that go to the festival.
Just for the dear listener who is in fact a art history major, we don't mean the group of seven landscape painters of Canadian fame. We mean the group of seven who write this like World War II Peregrines, like,
yeah.
Comic. They call themselves the group of seven.
And there's two of them.
Yeah.
Nice.
So just point of
clarity. You know, I just found that out. I genuinely thought it was just two of the seven here. That's a really good bit. I had no idea.
So I think it's just the two of them. I haven't seen anyone else involved. And when I go check,
I just assume seven.
Two of them.
What if it's a tragic story? What if there's only seven?
There's only two left. Yeah.
Well, we shared a bottle of cognac with them, so I feel like we would have heard any tragic backstories at this point.
By the end of the bottle, yeah.
For the record, that was like back alley homebrew cognac, for the record, in France.
That you drank under your table at the festival?
No, it was once the festival had closed. Oh. Just out of an unlabeled bottle.
We had to bribe a security guard to let us stay in the pavilion
with
said cognac.
We bribed him with cognac.
Something to eat, drink. Of course, such things are contrivances like so much here for the sake of appearances.
So I think there is an avenue if you can get in touch with the Canadian cultural institution.
Attaché.
Yeah, they have an actual name, but I'm blanking on what the institution name of it is. And they do a lot of the organizing or did a lot of the organizing for this specific event to get all of us over there. And so I think there is an avenue in that way if you don't have a publisher who's associated with it.
I have a logistics question. Maybe you guys don't know the answer to this, but how did you get all your inventory there?
We shipped ahead of time.
But like just a bunch of boxes, a pallet?
Well, I mean, I'm not going to speak for the other books that were there, but I personally brought our hero man costume.
Okay, so
myself.
You brought yourself going into France, border security, bringing books to sell.
Yeah.
Any issues?
So we were not selling them.
Yeah.
They had a clear not for resale sticker on them because they were a proof copy. So I was not selling them. I was just transporting them. But in terms of border security, the customs at the Paris airport was a machine. I didn't speak to a person.
Right.
They just scan your passport. They take your picture and you walk.
Oh, like not a metaphorical machine.
No, it was an actual machine. I just walked through a scanner.
Becoming more like I've done that a couple of times to Canada and the US, like certain airports. Yeah. You don't talk to a person depending on
it's much
where
scarier.
You go.
Yeah. So there were no questions that I had to answer. All the work, the books, I had about 30 or 40 copies of the book. They all said not for resale, for promotional use.
So if the limit with that is usually 15.
Well,
30 or 40. That's intent to sell.
I had no intent to sell. And no one stopped
international
me.
International incident.
I was just forced to carry these books with me the entire time until we arrived in Angoulême.
Now, I happen to have some photographic evidence of your time there. Mm-hmm. Do you want to explain this photo I have? So for the dear listener, I think it's important to describe the two gentlemen who are on the podcast now, Lyndon and Zach, are both in this photo, surrounded by dignitaries, men and women in suits, a giant Canadian flag. Lyndon, in the photo, looks like he knows what is happening. Zach, in these photos, looks so pleased to know Lyndon and to be standing as close to Lyndon as possible in these photos. Can you?
Yeah,
can
I'm all talk. He's pretty great.
Can you tell us what's going on in this set of photos?
So we were wrapping, I think this was the Saturday of the festival, and the day was starting to wrap up, and we were sitting in the Canadian Pavilion, I think after one of our signings, and the organizer, Thomas Louis, came around the pavilion, basically saying, the minister is coming. The minister of the French minister is coming to the pavilion. You know, basically stand to get ready. And so Zach and I were kind of hiding in a back corner for most of this.
Politicians are coming. The politicians
exactly.
Are coming.
Yeah. Yeah. And so eventually the minister of culture showed up. The French minister of culture showed up and they were doing the rounds. They were passing through the pavilion and I'm not going to pretend that I had a good reason for it. I just said, oh, I'm going to get up and I'm going to go meet the minister.
Yeah, because you're shaking hands like a dignitary.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah. So as they were passing through, I kind of chose my spot in the room strategically so that they'd essentially have to walk through me. and as they came towards me, I, you know, again, in very bad French, I thanked them for inviting us and allowing us to attend the festival and apologized for my poor French. And they said, no, your French is good. But it really wasn't. And Zach followed me, I think, in that story. It was Zach was, yeah, I'm going to come too.
That describes the bulk of our trip, I'd say. And Zach followed me.
Although Zach has a little bit.
I follow.
In one of these photos, you have the bearing of a security officer. Like you're looking, because you're quite a tall man. So you're looking down and like keeping an eye out. You know, like you're not interested in the conversation because you're looking for danger. I know now that it's because you didn't understand what anyone was saying. So, but this reminds me of another photo from your ancient past, Lyndon.
Oh, no.
This photo where you are shaking hands with the Minister of Culture in France, like a traveling dignitary and politician.
Yeah.
We have a similar photo.
We do have a similar photo. Yeah. From 12 years ago or 13 years ago, striking a similar pose.
We sort of met.
As
comics people like that.
Yeah.
And Lyndon asked, can we take a photo? And I said, only if we take a politician style photo.
Yeah.
And I just did it as a joke.
Yeah.
And so we did our very best.
And I was training.
Literally, I was in training.
Yeah.
that I was pretending, but you were the real deal.
I got a story too. You did it for FanQuest too. You did one with the mayor, remember?
I did one with the mayor. Yeah.
Pablo, so that was kind of cool.
Now judge. Now judge Brian Bowman.
Oh, is he a judge now? Oh, God. Yeah. All right.
Now he judges us. What kind of, can he fix a parking ticket?
Maybe.
Not jurisdiction. No, not in jurisdiction. But so you keep passing over this idea of you having a signing at this international book festival.
Yep.
I guess that was the done thing. That's how you would know when to be where.
That's right.
They were scheduled signings, and otherwise
we were free to do whatever we wanted. Yeah. So we got
shopping.
Yeah. So and actually, Zach, I didn't have a chance to really get into detail with you on the trip about this. So on the record, you can now tell the story as someone who doesn't speak any French. How did you find the experience of traveling there and interacting with people? And, you know, the quirks of the French people, because, you know, I lived there for a year. So all of the sort of mannerisms and patterns I was used to and very comfortable with. But as someone who historically had a terrible time in France last time you were there, can you talk a little bit more about what that experience was like and being at a French festival was like?
So with you, it was a lot easier. But on the last week in Paris when I was by myself, and also a couple times when I went for sandwiches alone, I ran into what you're describing. And I think I'll tell the sandwich shop story. Because in general, there's that, it's a well-known thing that in France or Paris, if you don't speak French, you'll get some rudeness. This sandwich shop owner, I was at the front of a busy line, it was hectic, and I, instead of my usual like, bonjour, at least if you start in French, it takes the edge off of you being in the wrong and not speaking the language. But this man, I was panicked and I just said, hey, I'd like a sandwich. And I was at the front of this line and he looked at me and in the best English I think I've ever heard in my life, like the most articulate and clear.
Wasn't
and perfect,
the line you said, I speak English?
Yeah, yeah. He said, I speak French. And then he, I think I said, I speak English. And then he just went back to never speaking any more English. But he made it perfectly clear that he could speak better English than I could. And then he went back to just, yeah. So I bumbled my way through the order and had a mediocre sandwich. And that's the kind of thing you run into without Lyndon there to bumble his way through apologies in French. That being said, I respect the hell out of that. That's hilarious. It's his country. I'm not in the right to not speak the language.
I've spent some time traveling abroad and it was put to me by some other people. So if you're a French person listening to this, this is a third party point of view from another nation. They said the reason that the French are upset if you don't speak their language is they're the colonizers. And if you're the colonized, you learn to adjust. And if you're the colonizer, you don't want to. And so the people in the areas around that had had a lot of, let's say, historical conflicts with the French nation, the French as a nation over the last 1,000 years, have a different reason why the French are rude about their language. So, and I think about that as in Canada, you know, how many of the languages of the indigenous people can we speak? I'd say zero, mm-hmm. right? And then we act all indignant if they want to protect their own languages or cultures. So there's, you know, I'll see that. Now, art can transcend all of that. Tell me about the books mm-hmm. that you brought back that you can't read. But
so my favorite book I found is called They Burn by Anne something. I should remember his name. He's fantastic.
Isn't the book like beside you?
I can get it, yeah. Anyway, I told myself in Paris, we were there for a couple days before going to the festival. But I told myself, no buying books. I'm going to buy a lot of books, so don't buy anything. But this one book spoke to me on the store shelf, and I bought it. And then at the festival, I ended up meeting Anis El Hamori. And I bought this book, but then I met him and I got it signed. And we took so long getting it signed, he got in trouble with his publisher.
For the dear
listener. So good. He and I got chatting and took forever with the signing. And then the next day I came back, bought a second book, did it again. And now we're chatting and we're buddies and we want to draw some stuff together, maybe. For each other's books, perhaps. But this book, I'm obsessed with it. It's just so loose and cool, and I'm trying to learn how to read it. I've read through it a couple times already, and I don't get all of it, but it's very cool.
Well, I mean, and that's the...
Yeah, Gregory, I'll bring this book out next time. It's cool.
That's the nice thing about comics, especially for like, because I'm a little, my French reading is still not fluent, but more advanced than yours is. And I find comics, French comics, are a great way to learn the language because so much of the action is still visual. So you're getting the complement of the language with a visual supplement, as it were. And you can contextualize the words you're seeing a little bit more easily.
You can try over and over and over again, just flip the page back, see if you understand.
And you can take your time with it. You know, it's different than watching, you know, one of the things that they often tell you when you're learning French or probably any language is to watch movies or TV with subtitles. But things move so quickly that it can be hard to keep up with that. Whereas with a comic, you can read it, you can take as much time as you want to try and figure out what's going on.
I found books and books, notepads and notepads, not all the ones that existed, but a bunch that were created. When my grandfather was learning to speak English, he would just recopy the newspaper. He couldn't read it, but he was just practicing the alphabet because the Cyrillic and the English alphabet are different. And so he was just trying to learn all the, you know, I can't imagine needing that.
A long time ago, when we first came here, it was so different. He was so different. He was like you.
The only other show I know, like over there, is the Paris Comic Con is like a notoriously massive show. It's like over 1 million attendees kind of thing.
True? Can that possibly be true?
1.2 million attendees. Did you guys hear any murmurings about that or any other European shows that are now on your radar?
The only other European show that's on my radar that I really want to attend that I hear about every year is Thought Bubble.
Oh,
and it's in the UK.
Yeah, I'd love to do Thought Bubble. Yeah.
But in terms of other European festivals, it's not something that we really had time to talk with anyone else about. So no, I don't know any of the other big ones that are.
Or did they talk, like the people that you met over there talk about coming to North America to do conventions over here? Was that something that ever came up? No?
No, not really.
Okay.
So is Angoulême the TCAF then? Because I looked up the Paris Comic Con for the first time. And luckily the landing piece is in English. And it says for true fans and enthusiasts of comics, manga, cosplay, gaming, films, sci-fi, fantasy, and more.
So pop culture.
So they have a pop culture show in Paris. And just to give some context, that's the Fan Expo, Toronto Fan Expo in Canada. Huge, our biggest show, 150,000 attendees, you know, 1/10 the size of the Paris show, but big for us.
Yeah.
And the TCAF crowd and the Toronto Comic Con or a Fan Expo crowd, not the same
different
people at all. I wonder if it's the same.
I bet it would be a similar thing. Yeah. Whereas Angoulême is like a literary festival, though albeit focused on comics. This sounds like more of a larger spanning pop culture convention that you're talking about.
So really the world is the same everywhere.
Just bigger over there.
Yeah. It's just, it's harder to buy a sandwich if you're Zach.
That's right. Yeah. Zach, how
I'm
did
actually...
you... I was going to say for the listener who, to add some context, Zach and I went to we flew to Paris together. We were jet lagged for 2 days together. And then we took the train from Paris to Angoulême for the festival. And then at the end of the festival, Zach and I parted ways and I spent a week there with my wife and Zach spent five more days back in Paris.
Something like that. Yeah.
On his own. So how did you fare that week after we split up?
Good. I was pretty burnt out from all the people at the expo. And so I mostly stuck to myself. During the days, I'd do tourist stuff. Like I did the Louvre. I did the Musée d'Orsay. I did the catacombs, which I've never... Last time I was there, they were closed for a strike. This time, I loved it. I took a bunch of reference photos I'm going to put in a comic one day.
So many skulls.
It was so cool. I love stuff like that. But anyway, during the day, I'd do a little thing like that, a little excursion. And then in the evenings, either my hostel had like events at night. Like one night, there was wine and cheese, so I did that. One night it was beer pong, so I didn't do that. I met up with some friends in the evenings that I had met at Angoulême, like Lyndon's friend who made Moondeer, whose name I'm Johan. Ewan. If you're listening, I'm so sorry. Ewan and I met up for a beer. It was lovely. I met up with my friend Dito from Angoulême. Just had a pretty chill week. I didn't do anything crazy. I was pretty fried after all those people.
Yeah.
Attendance of this show, do you guys have a rough idea Ooh, or comparing it to...
I need to look it up. I don't remember. I know it's bigger than any show here in North America.
Yeah, like just a silly amount of people non-stop.
Yeah, it's the largest show in Europe.
They're saying 200,000 on the site every year. I didn't hear about this year, but 200K.
Yeah,
and I believe
a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's wild in the scale, right? But it's about 10 times... It's interesting because... Their big Paris convention is 10 times the size of our biggest show, and their TCAF is about 10 times, 10 times the size of our smallest show.
Of our comics festival.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's, that's just the economy of scale. Now, is that, do you think we're just pontificating now, just the wider readership? Like it's people from lots of different countries coming into.
I also think that comics in Europe are not treated as a children's medium the same way they are in North America.
Right.
I think that there's a widespread stigma here in North America that comics are for kids and they're for collectors.
Right.
And that's it.
I blame Archie for that.
Archie?
Because it's the only one that held on to its newsstand presence.
Yeah.
Once newsstand comics went away, you could still get Archie at the newsstand. So people assume the only comics that exist are Archie.
Well, and superheroes.
Yeah.
That's it. And it feels as though, you know, the subject matter in European comics is so much wider than we have here in the West, in the sense that, or at least accessibly, in the sense that you can go into a French comic store and you can find a book on any subject. They have, you know, autobiographical, biographical fiction, nonfiction, comedy, you know, erotica, like the adult only books, kids only books. It's sort of, you can find anything and in like varying levels of artistics of, you know, illustrative skill. There's a lot.
I would say, I would add to that and say, we have those genres here in comic stores, but we have a small section in the back of the store for all of those grouped together. Is the vibe in most comic shops, whereas there they have as many of those as each other. Like have like so many more of each of those. Whereas like our comic stores are like, here's all the superhero stuff, and here's the back, here's the non-superhero section.
Yeah, it's a comic store is split into superheroes and non-superheroes.
Okay, so but
generally, like not 50-50, but like, you know, there's always a tiny section in general. There it's just like most of it is everything else.
You gentlemen brought a superhero book to Angoulême, though.
We did.
I mean, it's a satire, but on its surface, if you don't look beyond the cover, Hero Man looks like almost a retro style, almost pulpy old superhero. How did that go over to this audience?
I'm not sure if it was my own insecurity, but I do feel like there were people who looked at us and passed by that would never have even... Like who were just not into the idea at all. I'm pretty sure we got looked over because of it.
People. We kept getting introduced as people who made superhero comics. And we're like, oh, please, please stop saying that. That's not true, even a little bit.
We swear to God, it's the last time. Won't happen again. Okay.
So on that note, like usually if I go to a show that's very inspiring, I leave with like plans for next year, right? Like if I were to go back, I would do this differently. What was that for you guys? What would you do differently if you were to go back?
Zach's going to go back with more French.
Yeah, well, that too. But I'm saying, I think it's kind of different there because like I said earlier, at our shows, we have to improve and make money. There, you kind of just make the shit you want to make and people will find you if they want it because it's just not so tied into like making your table back.
But is that just our perception? So I don't know. Like, did you talk to anyone there? Like the friends that you made at the festival?
Yeah. So like
how they make
the publishers are paying them to sit there and sketch in the books for people because it sells more books.
Right.
So it's just kind of like it was taking time out of him drawing his next book and he's a very busy guy, but you're getting paid to be there. And that just takes all the hustle out. Not in a bad, that sounds, I don't know. I thought it was just it seems like a rosier arrangement to me, but there could be downsides I'm not aware of. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
paid to draw us. There could be downsides. I don't know.
I don't know what the, we would call it an advance, but I don't know what the page rate is in Europe for someone who's working on a book, mm-hmm. I get the sense it's probably lower than you expect it to be.
But like what I'm getting, like, do you guys, was this kind of more of a green light? Like I should do more of what I want and like less of what I think people want or what the norm is. I think I should just do whatever weird thing I want. Was well, it kind of-
I do that anyway, to be fair.
I know.
We all have that in common. That's kind of why we know each other is because-
Well, I think that's part of the success, product, right? Yeah. When the viewer can tell that you're trying to pander, like it, yeah. it pays off. That's why like, you know, so many shows and movies that are really trying to do what they think will sell, like those flop because you can just taste it, right?
Yeah.
And when a director, a creator comes along and does something that like really means something to them, those are the ones that stick.
What I thought was really interesting was that the mega stars there in the industry are not the mega stars that are here. So the idea is, you know, if we're creatives that are trying to make a living doing this work, if you have a North America centric view, then it's likely that your ideal path is to end up working at a big two publisher or getting a big image book, and working in this Western superhero space that then sort of drives into a film and media rights space. But then you go to a book festival like Angoulême and none of those things matter. Like we actually had someone at the festival say to us, what's Image Comics? Because they had no idea. And so the idea that there's an alternative market to graphic novels that is sort of the opposite of what we're used to here is both sort of scary, but also sort of liberating in the sense that the giant, it's a lot of work to get a big two book here and to get a big title at Image. And so you work so hard to try and be successful at it to then turn around and go, oh, this means nothing somewhere else.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All this work is basically is not, I'm not going to say useless, but is not the same value as it is here in North America is scary. But then you realize, but over there, there's a market for the other things that we would that we would probably reject here.
I had dinner with Howard Chaykin once, and he would say, you know, everyone wants to take the king's shilling, but if you travel around, you realize it doesn't spend the same in every country.
Yeah.
And so this is a good
example. Same idea of that, right? Yeah.
So, sorry, you had dinner with what? That's amazing.
Howard is a very interesting man. Yeah, 100%. Recommend anyone who can have dinner with Howard Chaykin, you should do so.
Puis-je vous aider?
Yes, we are here to speak with the Merovingian.
Of course. He has been expecting you. Follow me.
But it's different in like when we usually talk about coming from a home from a show and saying, what would I do different? Usually we look at it through the lens of how can we, you know, improve our booth? How can we sell more things? How can we make that trip, the next year's trip, more successful in some
how
fashion?
How can you light the crowd on fire?
Yeah. And it's a little different in the sense that at this festival, you know, we didn't have control of our stock. We didn't have control of our display.
Right. That would drive me crazy.
We were just at a booth. The booth was already set up. You'd show up at the beginning of the signing and then you'd leave an hour later.
Justin, we put up a little sign that said the name of your book.
And that's it. It would be like you showed up at a booth and you took a dragon nanny, you put it in front of you, and that's it. That's your display. That's how you're attracting people.
You could do it, Justin.
No, I love Dragon Nanny, and I think I'm proud of that book, but I think beautiful. Like, you know, my strengths are also that presentation, that ziggurat that we've spent years constructing.
That's not how that festival works.
But that shilling doesn't spend the same.
Okay, so did booths have any, like, was it just like you said, like they just had a blank table, books, and the name? Did anybody have
They'd have a publisher banner or something.
But it would just be one of those collapsible banner stands and that's it?
Depending on the booth. Yeah. So when you went to the big market where all the large publishers were, think of it more like in the sense of a craft show style setup where you have almost like a storefront within the tent.
Yeah. They build their...
They build a store. Yeah. They built a bookstore within the tent. Go ahead,
The
Zach.
One manga booth in the manga pavilion. There's a whole separate building for manga.
Yeah.
They built a giant gothic castle. So that was actually fairly showboaty.
But then in the indie booth tent, It was a lot more like you had an 8x8 square, and at the front of it, there was a table set up across the front, and you hang a banner across the front of it and a backdrop behind it. And that was it. And you had stacks of books on the table.
It's almost like an indie thing. Like the more subdued, the more legit you are, right? Like if you need to dress it up, then there's something off about you.
Well, I just think it's the sense of those indie publishers. They don't get the same leeway to build a store. Mm-hmm. And you don't have the same footprint space available to you as a major publisher.
But also, if you're not having to compete with a cosplay alley or a major film star guest, mm-hmm. then you don't need all the pomp and circumstance in that attention warfare that we have to fight every day at regular.
But I think just the way I'm built and trained, I love thinking about the like how it's going to display and what I can do to bolster the display. Like my next book, I have plans to do like a chloroplast cutout that has like a paper tool, like it's a multi-layered chloroplast cutout that's going to sit on the table, display the book, and then also have like enamel pins that are going to tie in with the book. Like I love planning all that stuff. So like to take that away and just have the book flat on the table.
Isn't a book like, enough? When will it be enough, Justin?
Oh, I just love all the add-ons that you can do, all those fun little things to make it eat like more than just a book. Get me so excited.
Well, I'm going
to
be so... Isn't the book experience enough?
Well, so I'm struggling.
No, I'm exactly the same as you. I want to build a giant 40-foot tall tower every time I have a lunch. So I get it.
You know, the difference, and I'm sitting here struggling to come up with how I would phrase this, so forgive me if I do it wrong. But at these
say it in booths, French first.
No. At the booths, and I'm gonna focus on the major publisher booths. So if you can picture you have a bookstore storefront where you pick up your books, you take them to the counter, and they say, okay, there's gonna be a signing for this later. And beside that storefront is a long table. Think of it like the celebrity alley at a convention,
right?
Where it's just person beside person beside person beside person with a lineup leading up to that table.
Yeah.
And there's a signing. And that's how one publisher sets up their display or sets up their storefront. But some variation of that is every single publisher there. And so the signings that you're doing as a creative, you know, you are not responsible for increasing the sales of your books at that festival. Sort of by the time you are arriving there at a signing, your book is either known or unknown.
The work is done. There's nothing you can do once you're there.
You're not trying.
It's a different shape for sure.
Yeah. So that's how I would describe it, is your signing or your book sales rest on the laurels that you arrive at the festival with. Mm-hmm. Like if you are already famous, if your book is already successful, they're going to sell lots of copies.
Right.
There's no, you can't.
Can't game the system.
You
with
can't
the...
build up a fancy display to
you
increase
can't
the
entice
sales.
New readers at the show. You've done, it's
it brings
done.
Us around to that book
There's no
festival.
Magician's tricks up front.
Yeah.
When we first launched Cassian Tonk, there was a person who gamed the system.
Perfect story. Tell this story.
Beautifully.
Yes.
So we go to this book festival.
The Toronto Book Fair, which happened 1 year only.
Yeah.
Because they wildly misled every vendor there to the scope of the event, the size of the event.
Hundreds of thousands of people will attend this enormous. And so they attracted
3,000 people attended.
Yeah. They attracted all the big publishers.
Scholastic was there.
Or and HarperCollins. Yeah. And like, you know, like if you've bought a book from a major bookstore chain, one of those publishers had a booth there. And some of them had very large booths and had put in a fair amount of infrastructure. But one booth stood above them all,
like actually high above them all.
You could see it from anywhere, and it looked from where you were like a giant tower of moss and forest that rose almost all the way to the ceiling of the convention space. And
25 feet tall,
at least higher, because it's just our memory now to prove it higher. And everyone went to check it out.
They had one book.
Yeah.
There was only one book.
My God. It sold one book, and you entered into this little forest area.
It was a tunnel, completely closed tunnel.
Little tunnel, and you would go inside, and then there was a stack of the books in this little forested area where, you know, in my mind, in my perfect memory of it, smelled like pine.
It was butterflies.
And then this like wizardess would sign the book and, oh, thank you for coming to see my book. And yes, it's the only book that, you know, this is the debut. And we
her
were
very
just,
first book.
Yeah. Oh a God. Debut author.
It's self-published.
Yes.
What?
Oh my God.
Debut author, first time out the gate. Don't remember the name of the book, honestly.
Nope.
I have it though, because I didn't buy a copy. And
did you read it?
I hope it's here in the studio somewhere.
So hold on, I'm gonna tell the whole story. So I come out and I've stumbled back out into the convention, right out from the Mystic Woods, and I'm holding the book and my hair is tousled. Right?
It's a day later.
Yeah, it's a day later. I'm not sure. Fell into the fairy circle. And so I'm standing around more interested in the display than the book itself, like just the whole experience. I was like, wow, okay. And so there's this older fellow.
Trick, yeah.
Yeah, the magician's trick. I want to see the magician's trick. There's an older fellow standing there, and he notices my notice, and he says, hey, what do you think? He puts his hands in his pockets, and he says, what do you think? And I say, wow, this is quite, like, you outdid Scholastics at this thing, and it's the author's first book. He said, well, that's my wife, and I do technology trade shows
like robotics and
robotics machinery. Yeah, he says, well, we might spend $500,000 to $1 million on the booth display for the sake of a single client that might come along and make your whole year. He's like, so when my wife is like, oh, we're gonna do a book fair, I rolled up my sleeves and I thought what we should do. And she kept holding me back. No, we should not this much. And it just got bigger.
But honey, it's your first book. We need to make a big splash with it. Right. Yeah.
And so a couple of things about this. Amazing that they had the capacity to do that. Obviously the funds to do it. Those are all.
Yeah. On
all
a certain level, it's charming.
On a certain level, it's charming. On another level, it's also must have been so nerve-wracking for her.
Yeah.
Who has seen the done way of doing it. Like you said, you're either famous already and people show up or they aren't. But the reverse can be true. They made the interest by being interesting.
Yeah.
And so people came and I bought that book. I did not read it, but I bought it as a tangible like vote for the experience I just had. It's like, you know, for $15, I will 100% buy this book from you.
Yeah.
Right. As a like, well done. Great job.
Yeah.
I noticed, and I hope it all goes well for you for the rest of your life. And so you kind of vote with your dollar in that way. So it can be that, but we've also seen the booth that goes big and there's no heart in it at all.
Yeah.
Like the cool part was in the middle of that forest was this author who dearly loved the work she had done.
She almost seemed embarrassed by the attention she was getting.
She was a little embarrassed. And so it was endearing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We've been to those booths where they built the big booth and they expect you to pay through the nose for a thing you have never heard of. And like, you know, we've arrived and now worship at our feet.
Yeah.
There was a good example of this at the New York Comic Con this year. I don't remember the name of the booth, but they got
Don't say Arcbound.
No. it was a massive booth near the front, and they were basically trying to capitalize on like kind of like what Pokemon is for kids, like with the gambling of the holographics and stuff, like the cards. Like they created like it was something like, you know, furry friends, and it was like they'd created 200 furry characters. They came with like it was cards or pins or something like that, and there was rare ones that you could like get if you got the right pack kind
and if
of
you
thing.
Could get on the blockchain if
yeah
you
it was Gregory totally dollars. A bunch of crypto bros were trying to it was so there was no art or creativity in it. It was like, this is how we make money, this is how we get kids addicted to our product, this is like, you know, how we make bank.
Yeah.
And it stank of business and no heart.
Yeah. Well, and I mean,
go
ahead.
You are the guest.
Well, even that big tower I mentioned, the big, they made the big Gothic wooden castle with the clock tower for that manga book. But then it wasn't an experience that I remembered like yours, where it was like, oh, it's a magical enchanting forest. It was like, there was a bunch of bored teenagers standing in front of it doing a retail job to sell you the manga. Like it just doesn't have that same. It was just to echo your point. Like in my mind, it's like, huh, that was big. Whereas like your experience was a tale to be told.
Well, and like the other thing is it's call this a gripe with artistic integrity. The idea that the magician's trick sucks you into buying something that isn't very good.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that yours was a case of that. It sounds like they had a wonderful spectacle and a charming creative and none of us know what quality the work actually was.
Here's the best part. If I had felt cheated by the experience, I could have read the book for another experience and had plenty of,
right.
But I actually felt so satisfied that I had paid for the experience I got that it didn't feel like I needed the add-on. It wasn't my genre. It wasn't exactly I wasn't the target audience. I did.
It was a young adult fantasy.
Yeah. It was a young adult fantasy for like quite young adults.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I feel like from going to enough shows, every once in a while you see the self-published author who has, you know, is trying to put on some pizzazz to sell their book. And then you flip through the book and you think, this could have used an editor. This could have used another pass. Like you put it out, but you need a little more artistic experience here, or you need to keep working at it.
It's a good first book.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see what book 3, 4, or 5 looks like.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, they're on their way.
But they're treating their booth display and their setup as though they've already reached that point, is I think.
Yeah,
there's a level of separation there.
And I think that's important, the fake it until you make it kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
There's been a couple of artists that have come onto the scene and, you know, they kind of stun you like, whoa, what's this?
Yeah.
They must have been around for a while. There must be a team behind this. But really, it's just somebody who, they're trying to make that splash.
So maybe the last thought here as we wrap up our international quest idea is that, dear listener, whatever it is you're working on, if you loved it and you put all that time and energy and effort into it, there's an audience somewhere. Maybe it's an international audience. Maybe it's a local audience. Maybe if you love it and you did your absolute very best on the book itself and you feel like there's more you could do to help that book reach its audience, that's when you start thinking about your display. That's when you start thinking about what festival, what publisher, what person might help you get it to the broader audience. But, you know, to Justin's point, if there's no heart in the product itself, your consumer will immediately know. And so you're not going to be able to sell them two things. So make sure you love the thing you're making, and it'll be much easier to connect with your audience in that way, no matter how big the display is.
Well, and the last thought I would have on this particular festival, Angoulême, is, you know, there are some festivals that you go to make money, and then there are some festivals that you go to for sort of the other intangible benefits that come along with being invited to an international festival and rubbing shoulders with publishers and building connections with other artists. And this was certainly one of those festivals that falls in the second camp. It is not one that you would necessarily go to. At least Zach and I would be going to try and pay our bills with.
That leads us to the end of our episode, dear listener. Though Lyndon has previewed our next episode, which I had already started writing. What does it say there? Intangibles. Oh, no. The intangibles that come along with having your book in certain places. Tune in next week to Super Pulp Science. This is GMB Kamichuk, encouraging you all to join the fight and make comments.